Welcome to this edition of The Gardening Show. Let's talk, 1-800-859-0957. Or, of course, you can email me at thegardeningshow.com. And if you ever miss the show or go back, and I've got a couple people said, what did you say? Well, we do podcasts. So click on thegardeningshow.com and then look for the podcasts. And you can go back and check and see if he really knows, said what he did say. And we'll talk a little bit about that. 1-800-859-0957. Lots of things going on. It looks like, feels like, I have my fingers crossed like spring is finally here. And that means some issues out there and some questions. So give me a call, 1-800-859-0957. Right now, though, I'd like to talk to Renata Renata, who is the perennial manager at MSU's Horticulture Demonstration Gardens. I've known you a long time, and I still can't, I can still screw your name up. I apologize for that.
No problem. It's done commonly.
Yeah, I have a name like Krauskopf. I'm used to it, too.
Yes, yes, a good German name.
They both are. Anyhow, let's talk about some good plant material, because coming up this Friday, Saturday, May 16th and 17th, is the annual plant sale at the Horticulture Gardens. And, of course, the money goes to support the gardens and the greenhouses and everything that you do at MSU. So the neat thing about it, if you're an MSU Garden Club member, you get first crack. That's on the 16th, right?
That is correct, yes.
Oh.
They get an extra 10% off, and the memberships here are relatively inexpensive, only $35, and that will give you not only 10% off on our plant sale, it also gives you some of our events that we have, our wine and chocolate party that we have at Christmas time, as well as reciprocal admission to a lot of botanical gardens around the country.
You know, that's a very good deal when you look at that part.
Yes,
not
it is.
That the 35 is for what you offer is very, let's say, cheap.
I think so.
I do too.
Our gardens are free. We do give you free parking along with your membership.
Yes. So, but anyhow, this, if you're traveling, you get that card and you get free entry in a tremendous number of beautiful, wonderful gardens across
right.
the United States. It's a great mm-hmm. benefit. And if you go, you can pay at the door, so get a membership. So if you want to get first crack at everything on the 16th, mm-hmm. You have to be a member. However, on Saturday, May the 17th, people line up before 7 because the doors open at 7 and it's sort of a mob to get in there. I've seen it. So,
yes. It actually, we moved our time up, our starting time from 9 o'clock to 7 a.m., and that did help a little bit. We get the early birds, though, and they are waiting out our door, which is wonderful.
But, again, it is at the Plant and Soil Science Building on Bogue Street on campus. What kind of plants do we have this year, Renata?
Oh, well, I'm lucky this year that I got a really generous donation of natives, so I'm featuring a lot of natives this year. I have them from A to Z, you know, asters down to zizia. Perennials, I've got quite a few of really nice cultivars. I've got some beautiful hostas, some wonderful Amsonia. I've got just heucheras and coral bells, a lot of the spring bloomers this
right.
year. So
really a broad selection, plus some annuals, too. I know
yes,
there's some annuals
yes.
in the sale.
Yes, Deidre Craig, who is our annual manager, has gone out of her way. We have annuals up and down, again, from A to Z, anything you could possibly want. And we have some really wonderful cultivars. Proven Winners has been, again, very generous with us. We've got quite a bit of their material. And we
Hort
also
Hort Couture, too, if you're familiar with Hort Couture,
yes,
which is a
yes,
really special line.
Absolutely. And we've done up hanging baskets. We've done up containers. I think it'll be really a great sale this year.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Our greenhouse manager, Dan, he's our vegetable guy, and I bet we have 2 or 3 different 100 kinds of vegetables here today. A lot of tomatoes. We're doing a lot of 4-pack type things where we're selling 4 different varieties of tomatoes together.
Cool.
And so our prices are pretty good. Again, this is a fundraiser for us. So, you know, we're not the cheapest guy in town, but we definitely are not the most expensive. Plus, the plants are really well taken care of here.
And you've got people that know what you're talking about.
Yes.
And you can select a wonderful selection and everything. So if you're in the Lansing area, If you're a member of the Horticulture Gardens, that's fine. You don't have to be. You can pay at the door on Friday to get the early bird time, and or line up before 7 a.m. at the Plant and Soil Science Building there on campus, and for the 2014 plant sale to benefit the MSU Hort Garden. So, Renata, thank you so much for being a guest here on The Gardening Show.
Thank you, Dean. It's been a pleasure.
It always is. And tremendous selection. Luckily, I was watching some of these grow when I was teaching up there this semester. Fantastic plant quality and also just downright fun place to go. 1-800-859-0957. Speaking of fun places to go, how about on the 17th, again, that if you're in Southfield, the first annual, inaugural, I guess, Southfield Home and Garden Expo on Sunday, May the 17th from 10 to 6 at the Municipal Complex on Evergreen. This is in conjunction with in conjunction with the city's Southfield Flower Day event, which has always been fun over the years. So this is an expansion, lots of good things. If the weather's bad, keep your fingers crossed, everything's going to be in the pavilion. So that'll be fun. On the 17th, too, again, the same day, if you're in the Jackson area, join me. I'll be at the annual Native Plant Sale, which is going to be sponsored by the Jackson County Conservation District, Soil Conservation District, and the Jackson County Men's Garden Club and Master Gardeners. This is at the Jackson County Fairgrounds beginning 8 to noon. I'll be in the Conservation District booth, so let's talk about, they got a tremendous number of native plants, just fantastic selection. So all kinds of things to talk about, things to plan about. 17th is going to be busy, but give me a call, 1-800-859-0957.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957. And I forgot to mention, on May the 19th, which is the Monday after this, everything's going on the 17th and all across the state, I'll be at the Parma Library, which is west of Jackson, from 6 p.m. So if you're in the area and have a question, want to actually see what I look like, maybe? I don't know. That's probably not a good idea. But anyway, I'll be at the Parma Library from 6 o'clock answering your questions, talking to you, and just having a great time. That's on Monday, May the 19th. But I'd like to talk to you right now, 1-800-859-0957. Or you can email me at thegardeningshow.com. And Gail and Hemlock, Brenda and Gibraltar, and Carolyn and South Lyon, I'll get to your emails as soon as I possibly can. Let's go to the lines. Let's go to Jim and Pinckney. Jim, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Well, thank you very much, Dean. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Okay, I've lived here about 47 years, my wife and I, and I planted these maple trees at least 40 years ago. And some of the trees, a couple of them, the grass grows around the trees okay, but I have two others. One I think is called a Crimson King or a red maple or something like that, and the other one's a regular maple tree. And the roots seem to be close, they are. The roots are close to the top of the ground.
Yep.
And I can't get anything to grow there. I put in annual rye and et cetera, and it'll go about a year through the summer, and then the following spring, things die. So my question is, can I add top dirt around there, 2 or 3 inches of top dirt, and get by, or what's your advice here?
You can. The problem is that you need, if you're going to add topsoil, you got to do it relatively slowly. If you want to add 2 or 3 inches, you're talking about 2 or 3 years to build that up, because the roots are going to have to move. Many of the maples, red maples and stuff, silvers are the worst, have a very high oxygen requirement around their roots. So that means they're right up on the surface.
Right.
And that means also that they're very good at getting all the nutrients, and especially the water that, you know, normally would be there. So that's why you can't grow grass. And it's, besides, it's shady. So shady, dry is just, you know, that is not where grass grows. You can continue to do what you're doing and just overseed it. And annual rye works great for that. It's cheap, grows fairly well in the area, and then you just do it again next spring. Okay. My thought is, and my wife calls me the laziest gardener she's ever seen, why do all that work? I'd rather go in and use mulch or something like that, kill the grass off, anything that's there, and just don't have to mow it anymore or do reseed or anything. Or you can do other things, decorative plant or decorative mulches, you know, that kind of stuff, and readily not even mess with the grass.
I planted some vinca last spring, and that's not doing that well either.
No. Again, there are very few plants where dry and dark. Let me look around, Jim, and I'll see if I can find something for shady and dry plant material. There are lists out there, but I still think about it if you need to. Let's just get rid of the grass and grow, put mulch under it.
Okay, all right.
But, you know, to save the work. But if you want to do it, and some people, just because of the site and the way the design is, that they really think they have to need grass in there, that what you've been doing with the annual rye, you know, year after year works very well. And it's just that you got to keep doing it. So
what if I pile up with a lot of rocks?
You know, you can a couple inches or so, but if you're going to do that, here's the trick, a couple of tricks, one of which is go in carefully two or three or maybe 3 or 4 weeks before that you're planning to get all this done, and go in and lightly spray, and I mean lightly, with Roundup or glyphosate, something to kill off the weeds and stuff that are there and any grass that'll come up. Wait a couple of weeks, make sure it gets watered a couple of times and see what sprouts back. There will be something, and you go in again. You don't want to get a heavy application in there. Of course, that can be taken up by the tree roots, so you got to be a little bit light on it. But two, that should take care of that. And then go in with landscape cloth, not the black plastics film, the sheets, but the woven material. You still want to get water down through there, and those roots are still down there, and they've got to have oxygen. So you've got to do that, and then go in with the mulch or the rocks or whatever you want to do. And the one thing about rocks, I'm not a great fan, I've got to admit, but check around. You got a couple of neat garden centers close by and nurseries. See what kind of rocks they've got available. There's a bunch of different colors and all these kind of things available now that usually in the past weren't available. So you might find some really neat stuff to work with rather than the regular old brown or the white. You know, you can do some really neat things if you want to go with rock. I wouldn't suggest any more than an inch deep, just enough to cover that landscape cloth so you don't see it, and that should be just fine. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
1-800-859-0957. And we've got the lines open. That's unusual. However, if the lines aren't open, or you just have that question in the middle of the night that you're dying to get an answer to, email me, thegardeningshow.com. If you look down through that webpage, and Nicole is a fantastic webmaster because she does a beautiful job with that, you can see the previous shows are there. If you want to click back into information on that, you can look at what we talked about the last week's show. You have the podcast if you want to listen to it. And then down at the bottom of the show, the webpage, you've got thegardeningshow.com, where you can email me. And Galen Hemlock emailed me a while ago about that, and she was looking for a organic fertilizer blend type of thing for a vegetable garden. And Gail, you're so right. A soil test is best, and that's always the way we start. The problem is with how do you know, if you don't have a soil test, you're kind of guessing. So you kind of try to balance it off. And the problems with blending your own organic is they all have phosphorus in them, almost all. And we really don't need phosphorus in many of our soils anymore, so it's kind of hard to blend it. Yeah, Gail sent me a recipe, if you want to use it that way, from the University of Georgia. That looks pretty good to me, Gail, but the problem I've got with it is that those recommendations are based on totally different soil types. They have a much longer growing season down there, obviously, and they've got a different rainfall pattern. They get even, it's hard to believe after this spring, but they get even more rain than we do. So that changes the soil chemistry, which means their rule of thumb mix may not work up here. So I'm going to see if I can find a webpage for you, Gail, that will talk about how to balance nutrients and organic blends and things like that. But you're so right. Get a soil test and let's start from there. 1-800-859-0957. And that was a great lead-in to the next call, which is Phyllis. And Phyllis, welcome to the Gardening Show. You have a plant food question.
Yes, I do. Okay, my husband makes all these vegetable drinks, and he likes the one with carrots, parsley,
okay.
And
yeah, I do too. Some of those are really quite
good. But we have got a problem with it. My husband said after we liquefy it and mm-hmm. the drink is great, it leaves so much residue that might or might not be valuable nutritionally. And I'm wondering, my husband said, can you use it for mulch or
sure.
can we use it in soups? I mean, I don't know.
You
know, because at least...
No, wait, yeah. First of all, my wife will say I'm also the laziest gardener she's ever seen and also one of the worst cooks. So take this piece of advice with that in mind. Seems to me that would be great. I like some of the smoothie type stuff. And all the different combinations are usually very good, but I don't see that much residue in the bottom of mine. However, you're doing something different. I would say that you could.
If you're making a smoothie, you wouldn't have any. It's probably just a smoothie is probably fruit, and you could do it in the blender.
Well, no, you can do it. I do it in a blender and throw beets and all this other kind of good stuff in.
Oh,
you can do that,
okay.
too, and it's good. So, yeah. But it depends on what you're doing. I would say I don't see any reason why you couldn't use it in a soup. You're going to extract some of the nutrients and also, I would guess, again, some of the flavors. So it might be kind of interesting on how that's going to go.
And my husband also asked about the mulch. Could you just, is it good for mulch?
Probably, but the problem is you got to dry it out. It's got to be dried out and fluffed out.
Oh, okay.
Hold on a second, Phyllis. Background music means, let's talk about this, and I will, right now, we'll be back in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about the things that we can use for mulches and how you need to treat them. And besides, I've never thought about using smoothie material. That's a good idea. And Art, you're on up next. If you want to join the conversation, 1-800-859-0957. Stay tuned. The Gardening Show will be right back.
Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Before I go back to Phyllis and White Lake and our conversation about plant smoothies and all this other kind of good stuff, need to thank three people that are very important and absolutely critical to making this show happen. Of course, that's Shannon Malley, Annie Nichols, and Rich Lozinski. Again, guys, thank you so much. You put up with a lot, and I appreciate it. Let's go back to Phyllis and White Lake. Phyllis, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Now, what we were talking about is this great material that you have left over from your husband's, whatever he shakes and things that he's making. How much of this stuff is he drinking a day? Has he got lots of it, or is it going to be how much?
No, because actually, if you take too many carrot drinks, you really turn orange. I mean, not real
now,
orange.
Now, there's a picture, I guess. Okay.
But you do.
Yeah,
but
you
anyway,
do.
But probably about twice a week.
Okay.
And it's really very, very good for you. Immune system, eyes, everything.
And they taste
so
good,
too.
So
we do that.
And then
he also does some fruit drinks, too.
Okay. They make jokes about it, but the ones I've had and the ones I make, they're very, very good. So I encourage people to play around with it. That's fun to do. However,
absolutely, it's fun.
Now, you've got a couple of options, and you were talking about the residue that you've got and what to do with it.
Yes.
The first thing I think about is, do you have a compost pile or a compost bin of any type?
No, but we could get one.
I would suggest you do, because this sounds like ideal filler material for a compost bin. Or vermiculture, where they use the worms, things like that, and then they'll break it down, and then you can use the products of either the compost or from the vermiculture to in your gardens, flower beds. People use it in for their houseplants. So to me, that would be the ideal way to do it. If you wanted to do it as a straight mulch, the problem you got is that many of these things, once they dry, they get hard as a brick, and they just don't allow water in. So you've got to dry it, grind it up a little bit, break it up, and fluff it before you put it on a mulch, because you got to the mulch has to not only prevent weeds and do that, it's got to allow oxygen and water to get through. And if it sets up hard, it won't do that. But this sounds like an ideal compost material to me.
All right, a healthy for us and healthy for the
right.
plants.
Have you ever done any compost by chance, Phyllis?
No, never.
Okay, not a problem.
So
check my
website.
Check my website, thegardeningshow.com. Give us to about the middle of the week, please. And I'll put a website up there that talks about compost. Or check with Michigan State University Extension. They have a master composter class. Don't think they offer it in the summertime, although I don't know that for sure. And it's really quite an art, and it's a lot of fun. So check my website, thegardeningshow.com, about the middle of the week. Okay?
Oh, we will. It's been a world of information that you've supplied. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And for all you are listening out there, take my wife's thing. Anything I say about cooking, ignore. Okay, Phyllis? Just
all right.
Anyhow, I won't talk about cooking. Let's talk about plants. 1-800-85 Okay, thank you, ma'am. 1-800-859-0957 Let's go to Art in Shelby Township. Art, welcome to the Gardening Show. Are you there, Art?
I'm here.
There you go. Welcome.
Okay. Hey, let me give you a short history. We've got this house about 5 years ago and had no grass out in the backyard. It was mostly sandy soil.
Sure.
We had a fairly good-sized hardwood tree that blew down, roots and all.
Do you know
so I had a guy come out, they ground up, you know, they took away most of the tree, ground up the roots, filled in the hole with some soil, and we put down some more topsoil and hydro-seeded it.
Okay.
And we've got this 8-foot diameter circle or so that just won't go grass.
Now, do you happen to know what kind of tree it was by any chance, Art?
You know, it was, my brother told me it was like an applewood or something. It wasn't really an apple tree, but he said applewood, and I don't even know what that is, but it was a,
you know,
probably about a 10 or 12-inch diameter hardwood tree.
Wasn't a black walnut by any chance?
No, it wasn't a black walnut.
Okay, good. Or a regular walnut either.
I don't think it was a walnut.
Were you there when the guy ground the trunk, ground the stump out and did all that?
Yes.
I'll bet he dropped all the sawdust right in the hole.
Well, there's probably a lot of sawdust in the hole.
That's the problem.
But, you know, it's got probably 6 inches of topsoil over the top of it.
It doesn't make a bit of difference. The top.
Okay.
What's happening is that the microorganisms and everything are working on that sawdust underneath and just sucking all the fertilizer out of it. Also, because that sawdust is usually very fluffy, it absorbs water. Water drains through it very quickly. So any, you know, that 6 inches of on top is just like a sponge laying out in the sun. It just dries out very quickly.
Yep.
And I guarantee you, if you go down in there, you'll find it's mostly sawdust. Now, you got a couple of choices, in my opinion, one of which is get that guy back in here, tell him to get that out of there, and I want the hole filled up. That'd be my first choice.
Yep.
The second choice would be to come in. What are you gonna put back in this, the hole? Or
just grass.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're going
to. I want grass to grow there.
All right. Really, you need to get that out of there or a good part of it out of there and get soil in. Because the other option, if you're going to put a flower bed in there, I would say just go in and mix topsoil in with the sawdust and you'd have the best flower gardening planting mix you ever saw in your life. But if it's just for grass, you really don't. That area, if you just planted grass there, is going to be different than everything on each side of it for almost forever. So if you're going to plant grass, take the sawdust out, put the topsoil back in, and start over again. If you want to put a flower bed in, just mix the topsoil in with the sawdust in there, and then you can fertilize it and adjust the pH, and it would grow. It'd be a fantastic flower bed. I'll guarantee you that.
Yeah, it's a fairly sunny area. I mean, the whole yard is fairly sandy soil, so it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was pouring rain we had the other day, it just drained right out.
My thought would be is when they dig, tell him to bring his backhoe in or whatever he needs to dig that out. Bring your load of topsoil in to fill the hole, and then just spread the sawdust over the rest of the yard about no more than a quarter inch thick.
Okay.
And just let it go in. It'll break down real quick.
Excellent. And
that way you don't have to haul it away. But I'll guarantee you, if you get down under there, there's no soil at all. It's just all sawdust.
Probably. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Good luck.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Bye. 1-800-859-0957 or thegardeningshow.com. Brenda in Gibraltar, you ask a landscape question, except it's not my area. You're looking for someone, you're down, of course, Gibraltar's in the Downriver area of Metro Detroit, installing stone steps in your backyard. That's not my area. There are landscape companies that do that. Problem is most of the run-of-the-mill landscape companies that do it use pavers and stuff, not steps where you got to do the stone work. Some of them may or may not. My suggestion would be to give America's handyman, Glenn Hagee. He is right here on our flagship station, WGR Detroit, 12 o'clock tomorrow to 2. Give him a call. He knows everybody. And he'll get it takes a specialist to do this because a lot of times what they're doing is when they install the stone steps, you're really not installing stone. What you're installing is concrete steps that are covered with stone to look that way. They're much more stable. So that's kind of a neat trick. If you can't get through to Glenn, again, 12 to noon in WJR, our flagship station, if you're here in the Metro Detroit area tomorrow, talk to the suppliers around. If you know somebody, there are a lot of downriver people that sell flagstones and things like that. Ask the suppliers. They know who will do this kind of work. It's not just like putting pavers out. This is not what you're talking about, Brenda. So it's going to be a little bit more involved. You're going to need more somebody probably with a little more of a contractor end of it rather than the landscape end of it. So hopefully that helps. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Joe in Dexter. Joe, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, good afternoon. I enjoy your show. It's very informative.
Thank you.
I am not much of a gardener, but I enjoy listening to it. I've got a problem with a rental property. The house sits high on the property.
Sure.
And it's probably linear about 20 feet to the sidewalk, but the grade from the front of the house to the sidewalk is about 45 degrees.
Whoa.
And it's way too steep for grass. And the previous owner planted myrtle there, which was a really good solution.
Yeah, should work.
But the gas company came in last year, a year ago, a little more than a year ago, and put in two new water mains, or gas mains, I'm sorry. And they planted grass seed, and now I've got a 20-foot-wide section of grass in between myrtle on each side of it, and I wonder the best way to get rid of the grass and replant myrtle.
Did the grass take, Joe? Is it pretty thick?
It took like a jungle.
Good. No, that is a good thing, because what I'm suggesting you do is use glyphosate on it, good old Roundup or any of the products that have glyphosate in them. They're great grass killers. And you're just killing that sod off. It'll stay in place, so you know, until the myrtle gets a chance to establish itself. So you're not going to have any slippage. And you just, after the grass gets killed off, you just dig the hole and plant the myrtle right in there.
Till that grass in once?
No. You want it to stay on there because it's holding that bank.
Oh, okay.
All you're doing is killing it off, but the roots are still there. So physically, until they rot, they're going to hold that soil from slipping, and by that time, we hope the myrtle will be, you know, established and holding the soil. Myrtle is fairly cheap, to be blunt. Put it in, plant it thick, so you get it established pretty quickly, okay?
I was wondering if I could take portions of the existing myrtle and transplant them.
You could. It's easier, faster, and it'll do a better job. Go check your local garden center or nurseryman and just buy it from them.
Buy a whole boatload of
myrtle. Put it in thick. They'll give you a spacing. You want that to get established just as fast as you can, because that sod is going to, you know, decay pretty soon, and then that whole thing's going to slip. Stay tuned. The Gardening Show will be right back.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957 or thegardeningshow.com. And you can email me there, or you can look up information from previous shows. We do podcasts. In other words, the recordings of that, if you happen to be someplace where you can't get your normal radio station or you're just busy that time and you want to listen to it. Or, you know, you can also check out all the information on there. And Barry and Montrose, you were interested in the, there's a whole a new material out for killing grubs that needs to be applied very quickly, plus some old standby materials that work very well, and a bunch of them out there that don't work at all. So check my last week's show, click into that, and you'll find a listing of an article from Dr. Dave Smitley on his latest recommendations, and look at the timing and the new material out there on grub control materials, because we do have some new chemistry coming online. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Linda in Farmington Hills, and then Michelle in Monroe, you're up next. Linda, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Thank you, Dean. So glad to hear you back on the air.
It is so. It's been so much fun to be back. Thank you.
Yes. I have endless summer hydrangeas,
yep.
And I've had them in for about 3 years. I think this is the fourth. And every year I very, very carefully prune them to where I see a leaf or a bud coming out.
Mm-hmm.
However, I saw my neighbor, who has a gardener, take theirs down to about 8 inches.
Yep.
And I thought, maybe I don't know what I'm doing.
Maybe her gardener doesn't know what he's doing.
Would you direct me?
I will.
How should I?
What I'm going to do, though, for everyone else that has issues with pruning hydrangeas, you know, the issue is that most people, if you get the, you don't know which one you're dealing with, and there are a slew of new ones coming on the market that are basically ever blooming, like Endless Summer. They bloom, some of the old ones bloom on old wood, which means that the wood the flower buds form in the fall. Some of them bloom on new wood, so you can prune them in the spring. And if you screw that up, of course, you don't get any flowers. The thing with Endless Summer or in those varieties is that they bloom on both. So you don't prune them at all. Very little. Only time I ever prune Endless Summer is to shape it. If I got a, you know, a wild shoot going that way, I'll take that back. The idea is you don't ever want to prune it because you're going to take flowers off. Now, I don't have a clue why the gardener took it down.
Yeah, I was shocked.
Well, there are reasons. Do you happen to know if it was
10 of them?
Well, if you wanted to start over, in other words, if you get into a position where they haven't been pruned for a long time or something happened, you lost part of the plant, sometimes to shape it back up, you're just going to sacrifice everything, allow it to grow back, and then shape as it goes. That'll take about 2 or 3 years. And that's a legitimate decision. You know, it depends on the situation. But in your case, with Endless Summer, it's not that vigorous a growing plant anyway, in my experience with it.
No,
you just
shape
it a little bit. If you got a wild shoot, or it gets too thick in the middle, you take a few out. The rest of the time, I love it because you don't have to work. Just enjoy.
Right.
You know?
Yes, they are a joy. Yes, they are.
They are. And the neat thing about hydrangeas is that they were kind of a specialty thing because you had to know, they had to be in the right spot. They had to be pruned correctly. With these new ones, if you got nice, sunny, 6 to 8 hours of sun, a little winter protection, they should do just beautifully. And so it's great. These new ones are wonderful.
Terrific. Well, then I'm going to leave them alone.
Yeah, keep an eye on the other one and see what happens, but I got a sneaking suspicion they just gave up on it, and they're going to try to regrow it to get it shaped again.
I'm going to keep my eye on them. I'm interested.
Okay.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Linda. And I will put that up on my website, thegardeningshow.com, on pruning hydrangeas, you know, even the old types. I've got a beautiful one. I love it to death. It blooms once every 5 years because it's not in the right spot. I understand that, but I'll put up with it. Because I love it when it blooms, because it's a mass of blooms 5 to 8 feet wide and 5 to 8 feet tall. The rest of the time it's just green. But that's okay. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Michelle in Monroe. Michelle, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have two small lilac bushes that I planted about 7 years ago at my cottage in northern Michigan. And they are not blooming, nor are they growing very much.
Is it, what kind, is the old-fashioned purple lilac the one? Yeah. The one that's usually a weed.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. A couple possibilities. You're down on the Monroe clay, right?
This is up in northern Michigan.
Oh, on the sand? Is it sandy up there?
Yes.
Okay. Part of the reason is that until they get established, they need to be watered. So I don't know if you had a chance to go up frequently or not. That might be part of it. Typically, the other problem is they're under in a shady spot. They need full sun. Is that a possibility?
For one of them, yes. The other one has sun for most of the day.
They should have grown by now. A couple other possibilities. Can I ask what part of Upper Michigan it is, roughly?
Right by Mackinac City.
Mackinac City. But that's pretty much, that's pure, almost still very sandy up there, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, okay, here's some other possibilities that I'm guessing. One of which is that there's something under there, a layer down below them that's blocking the water or oxygen or something.
Oh, okay.
And the easiest way I can tell you is to go get a 5/8 inch or not a 3/8 inch steel rod, any of the Home Depot, Lowe's, they all carry them, and just use it as a probe. And you can feel a hard pan under there or a rock or layer. That could be the problem. The other thing is, did you you got them at the same spot where they happen to be shoots off the same plant by any chance?
No, they are in two different spots.
when you dug them up originally and then transplant them, they were in two totally different spots.
I bought them originally from a florist up there, so.
Oh.
They're baby.
Oh. Because this variety that they use for florist hydrangeas is not the, or lilacs is not the same that we grow.
Oh, really?
Not usually. A lot of those are coming in from Holland, actually, to be interestingly enough. You know what I would do? If you want the old-fashioned purple one, you got a neighbor with one?
Yes.
Go ask them. You know, they all have shoots at the bottom. Go ask them and just see if you can take off one of those suckers down at the shoots bottom. But what you do is cut a circle around right now and, you know, be nice to it, give it lots of water and all that, and then transplant it in end of August. Because what you're going to do is grow a great new root system in there. You take it up north. September, it starts to rain. It starts to cool off. And it'll establish very quickly. And I'll bet next year you're going to have to step back because it's going to hit you in the eye growing up.
I'm sure.
Those things are weeds, you know. So I think the variety you got is just one that doesn't do well here at all. The only thing I can think of. But use that steel rod idea. That's always a good idea. See if there's a rock ledge or something down underneath. But oh. I bet it's the variety, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well,